You know, I'm not trying to pick a fight or anything. I think it was silly. I'm going to start to parlay. I'm going to say, oh, hey, look, I thought you were attacking me. Looks like you're not. Why don't we talk about this? Let's resolve this. We can really become friends, I think. It's about time that we did become friends. Meanwhile, the magic user up above throws his dagger at one of the kobolds, missing. Although wait a minute, it doesn't make sense. He throws his dagger at you, Mirror Man, and he missed you barely with a 9, because you're down in the pit attacking his friend and all this. So he threw his dagger at you and he missed you. Now, Foghorn, you see this. I'm gonna have to stab him with the dagger. I want to talk about it. Do you know what I do? This is what I say. I pop up, and I say, "Stop there, down there, cleric, a symbolic cleric. You stop there, symbolic cleric. I'm gonna get this guy." I pop up with my dagger, and I say, "You stop there, symbolic cleric. You stop fighting. Look, if you heal our fellows who are down there, I will return your holy symbol to you, and I won't stab this man with this dagger." All right, now you have a charisma of 7, so people are disinclined to listen to you, but let's just see if you failed your charisma check. So, and you notice that the wizard is now casting a spell at you. Meanwhile, back at the battle at the gate continues, and oh, the dwarf cuts through another of these guys vicious, killing another one, doing 5 points of damage. That's another one, bites the dust, and Mr. Hyde, oh, misses epically, losing his sword or his hand axe. He strikes down with his hand axe, rolls a 1, and just flips over himself and lies on his back, and the goblin there, or the kobold there, is smiles and drools over him. Meanwhile, the cleric down below, he hears what Foghorn Pete's saying. He's being attacked by two people at once. Let's make a morale check for him. Look at that. He is a coward deep down. He says, or he's a pacifist, equally. He says, "Stop. Okay, how does he talk? He's like, "Stop. I am a man of peace. If you return my symbol and my shield and my mace, I will happily bind these wounds and heal your friends." He looks up at his friend, the magic user. And let's see if you catch the gesture. You do, you see him, and he winks. He winks at him. "Oh no, not a real bargain. And I see the magic user has prepared a spell. And I have my dagger. Oh, I'd love for this to come to a nice conclusion. I offer a counteroffer. I say, "Look, Mr. Cleric, we didn't intend to pick a fight with you and your crew, but somehow it's happened. Now, I don't want to, but I can freeze you right now if your friend doesn't stop casting his spell. And my friend can freeze your friend right now. We can paralyze the both of you with my dagger. If you heal a large fighter who's sitting right next to you right now, I won't strike. And yes, you can have your holy symbol back, but that's it. That's my counteroffer." Foghorn Pete, you feel the mage is about to lose his spell. What are you going to do?
"I know he's gonna lose his spell on me. Can I hide? I think I'd just like to hide. And then he won't see me." anymore. I'm just gonna just disappear kind of into the brush.
I think you've got to take a minute to hide. I don't know if you can just hide while he's looking at you.
You know, I'm so tiny, and we're not that clear on the rules on this, so why don't I just, like, quickly hide?
All right. Well, I rolled a 1 on a d10 to see if you could hide, and that is a 10 would be a failure, and a 9 or below is a success, so a 1 is an extreme success. So you hide successfully. The way you do it is you just take some dirt, you throw it in his eyes, and then you run around behind him. And you just get behind a little kind of scrape of ground. You just kind of like nudge your body under there. It's just like a little divot in the ground. And you move your 3-foot form and you kind of slink in there. He blinks his eyes and he looks and you're not there anymore. Then he points into the pit and he says, "You." Wait, how does this guy talk? This guy talks differently. And actually, it turns out, to be a female. But it's just such a cowled person that you didn't know before. But you. How's she talk? It's more like, "You. In the pit. Drop the dagger. Or I'll magic missile you." You know that a magic missile will hit unerringly and will cause enough damage to probably knock you out, kill you, slash. Because you're a wizard with 5 hit points. Magic missile, I think, does D4 plus 1. The bartender who you absconded with in the pit, she decides to stop fighting, and she squirms out from underneath the cleric and climbs out of the pit. And since nobody lays a hand on her... Oh, let's see if she accidentally touches the paralyzing tentacles. She does not. But then she sees all the coin in the pit. She looks at what's happening. She sees the fight with the kobolds. And she doesn't see Foghorn Pete, and she sees the wizard up there. And she considers everything. It's her intelligence. Wow. Her intelligence is 4. That's a very low intelligence. She can't... I don't think she can really speak very well. Or anything. Maybe she's had like some kind of head trauma or something. She's an intelligence of 4. That's barely an intelligence. I rolled a 2 ones and a 2. So she's just gonna walk home. Get out of the pit, go home. She's gonna walk downhill away from all this stuff. Because there's something about low intelligence which is very smart in a way, you know? So she's just going to get out of here and be done. She starts walking away. Or would it... I mean, the stupidest thing to do would probably be to, like, walk... You know what? This is what she's going to do. Instead of walking... Because this is kind of the stupidest and the smartest thing at the same time. It's the riskiest, you know? She's going to walk into the castle area through the hole in the wall. That's like 100 feet. So there's this long wall. In the middle are doors. The doors are being contested. They're being fought over by the dwarf and the other guy and the kobolds. And she's just going to walk around. About 100 feet down, there's a 10-foot wide gap in the wall. And she's just going to walk in there and go see what's in the ruins. What's her wisdom? Her wisdom is a 10. Yeah, so she does it in a cautious way. Wisdom 10, intelligence 4... Strength was 9. Okay, and she is, what's her name? Esmeralda. And it could be that she's wearing a cursed apron, which has enfeebled her, that the landlord put on her, that made her functionally stupid to have an intelligence of 4. Because it's hard to survive in the world, I think, with an intelligence of 4. But again, like we said, it could be this kind of brilliance under there. So she chooses the path of least resistance rather than walking down the hill along a path towards who knows what. It seems that people are interested in this castle, so she's going to go into the castle. The castle is the closest thing to the inn, you know. But she probably doesn't want to work that job anyway, because maybe we've established that she's in some kind of servitude or bondage. So she's escaping that, and she's going to see where fortune takes her. And she will pick up that skull head with her. Then she'll walk with it, the cobbled skull head. walk right into the castle, past the combat. Oh, meanwhile, back at the gate, the kobolds, two of them with bows, drop the bows, and they rush the guy who's lying on the ground. In fact, I think that they're all going to rush. They could get four around the guy on the ground, and then the other three can go for the dwarf. So they just charge. They drop everything, and they charge. One of them hits Mr. Hyde, swing their little swords. Ooh, one of them gets past the dwarf's amazing armor and just slides it under his ribs, slides a sword under his ribs. And you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. And my name is Fritz, spelled with a Z. Donnelly, spelled with a Y. From Z to Y. Fun with Fritz, Saturdays at 10 and 10.
Hi, I made this chair of comfortable columns and a window headrest. Yeah, I made this chair. You see me sitting in this chair that I made out of comfortable columns and headrest. I'm a dwarf of the Bugglebeard clan. There's a lot of brothers and sisters in arms fighting against the goblins and the orcs. And I came down and was one of the dwarves to come out of the clan, the Bugglebeard clan. We had a nice time together, me and the dwarves. I am a dwarf, so having been with the dwarves, we had a wonderful time together. But due to a misunderstanding involving the head of the clan, I've taken my head away from there on my legs as fast as they could go, traveling downhill all the way. And now I've run into some humans, and I'm going to adventure with them. We'll see where things go, because I've got nowhere to go home to as a dwarf.
I mean, basically, this dwarf, I can't see how he's going to be defeated. He's got 20 hit points. These guys each have 5. He's wearing plate mail armor. It's going to be just hard to hit him and hurt him. Mr. Hyde, on the other hand, is down to 2 hit points, and he could go down. So let's see what happens. 8, 4. You know what? They all missed. And he's now completely surrounded, and he can't get up. Two of the kobolds manage to climb onto his legs. And then 2 of them attack the dwarf. 1 hit. Now the dwarf just makes a mighty swing and roar, roar. And I think that he hits even with an 11. Yeah, they have an AC of 7. Yeah, he hits. His axe does 8, 10 points. He just cuts the head clean off one of these little kobolds. Oh, man. Just a gruesome sight. And 4 damage to the dwarf, which is the maximum that his little sword can do. So the dwarf takes a slice across the neck. This cuts into his neck, makes him really uncomfortable. A lot of blood, but sort of surface wound, but really uncomfortable. And the dwarf roars with rage, and he kind of hefts up on his axe, and he stabs the guy with the butt of his axe, kind of like winding him, and then he swings the blade, but he wins the guy, and then the guy rolls, and the blade swings clear. So the dwarf missed, first miss. Mr. Hyde just tries to roll out of his situation, slicing at one of them as he goes, and also misses. But now Mr. Hyde is standing up again, and he's able to, you know, defend himself better.
I was walking outside, and I saw a goblin, and decided I talk to the goblin. And what they say, the goblin's like, "Hey, get in my way, because I want your money." And I said, "What do you mean, get out of your way, you want my money?" One of them, "If I'm out of your way, then you can want my money more, because you're not in my way anymore. But if you take my money now, then you have my money, and then I can get out of your way. So either make a decision and just tell me, either get out of your way or give you money, or tell me to," and then I swung at him with my sword, and I got him, and I took his money.
That's Maximilian Overdrive. So there's a bit of a standoff happening over there. The magic user feels that it's time for him to weigh in. He says, "Truce. Why are we fighting each other? How does the guy talk again? Like, Oh, it's a her, right? Why are we fighting each other when we could be fighting them? Help us, and we will help you. Foghorn Pete, the world swimmer. Yes, help us, and we will help them. And Foghorn Pete pops up, and he's going to fire. He's got a short bow, and he's going to fire an arrow into one of the guys who's attacking Mr. Hyde. And he hits with a 15. Foghorn Pete, yay! And does 2 damage, which just wounds one of them. So one of them is now wounded. He's got 2 hit points left. But still, nice job, Foghorn Pete. The wizard who's with you there is going to throw a dagger, and the dagger actually hits a 19. And he's hitting another one who's been bothering Mr. Hyde. He did 1 point of damage with the dagger. That one has 3 hit points left. All right. So you're contributing. The cleric heals, casts a Cure Light Wounds spell. Oh, but he's a symbolic cleric. He needs a symbol. So who had the symbol? Oh, the dwarf. The dwarf had the symbol. The dwarf is right there. The dwarf's body's right there. So the cleric takes the symbol off the dwarf. He casts a Cure Light Wounds spell on who? On Maximilian Overdrive, I guess. And I think it's D8 plus 1. And Maximilian wakes up, now has 6 hit points. Oh, he stretches. He's like, in it. Oh, I'm feeling good. Thank you. You healed me, and you're great. Not only that, wait a minute. Where'd she go? Where's the lady? You know what? I'm going to protect you. He looks at the cleric. He points at him. I'm going to protect you like I protect her. I'm going to protect you and go where you're going to go. This lady fell asleep back at the inn. She fell asleep on me, and I grabbed her, and then I took her all the way over here. And now that you are going with me and we're going together, I'm going to protect you, and we are together. We're going to make it out of this. Let me give you a hand, and I'll boost you up. They all climb up together, and what do you do, Mirror Man?
I, too, am going to climb up out of the hole, and, you know, things have taken an interesting turn. I still have my dagger with the paralysis poison, and when I pop up, you know, I have so many of these little daggers. I'm going to throw it if I can, if I'm within close enough. I'll throw it at one of the kobolds at the door. But even better might be to go and get the horse and bring it around. And anyway, I'll make myself available for the combat. If there's an opening, I'll go ahead and throw it.
Now, the kobolds are not oblivious to this situation, but they're going to give it one more go. You know, they see that there are reinforcements coming, and they're feeling like, okay, this could be it. However, since you guys missed last round, they're confident that they could maybe make something happen. 19. The dwarf is hit again only once with a 19, but still, that's damage. Struck with a little short sword. Oh, doing a mighty 4 points of damage. They've done pretty well at the dwarf. They've hacked him down to half of his original 23. He's now at 12. And this is just, you take a hack across the back of the leg, you know, just any unarmored part of you. Whoa, whoa, they're just hacking away. And the dwarf, he switches arms with his axe, and he jams it towards a kobold, and I think that he hits with a 9, or he just misses. He would normally need a 12 if he were first level, but he's now 4th. He probably hits. Well, it's high as he hits, low as he missed. He missed. Just a great... No, I think he hits. It's a kobold AC 7. Oh, he missed. He missed. Lowsy missed, and I rolled lows. He missed. Missed the kobold. Okay, now Mr. Hyde gets attacked by 1, 2, 3, 4 of these guys, 2 of whom are wounded. And they're just 4, 6, 12, 6. They just miss. I can't believe it. Mr. Hyde just... He's like slick glue. He has an armor class of... He's just wearing leather armor, and they keep missing him. But, you know, they keep hitting the guy in plate armor. It's interesting, and there's fewer of them against the dwarf. It's funny how probabilities don't work sometimes. So Mr. Hyde is sick of these guys. He kicks one in the face, and he slaps another the back of his sword, trying to just subdue him, and says, "Surrender!" And he rolls a 2. He just misses. The kick goes wide, and the sword slap just hits the dirt. And they just scoot away. They're just quick and nimble, and they scoot right away. These little fellows
are now open to attack from all the rest of the group. So, Maximilian Overdrive, what do? I charge up, don't I? And I grab, I'll take out my giant two-handed sword, and I'll just swing it right through a couple of them. I roll 18, and like 10 damage. I'm just going to like cut one of them, just cut them away, 9 points of damage. Just boom, just cut them right in half. And that is an epic swing. And you just cut, you do, you just, unfortunately, you just cut one, unfortunately for him, and for life on this planet, you just cut him right in half. And then next to you, the mage throws a dagger, both of the, oh, a 20, he hits with his little paralysis dagger, the guy takes 3, let's see if he's paralyzed, he is paralyzed, yep, he rolled, and he's paralyzed, so he's got 1 hit point, but he's paralyzed. And you rejoice, Mirror Man. The other magic user rolls. He rolls a 2. His dagger goes flying wide. Another arrow fired by Foghorn Beat. And I roll a 9, which I think... What do I have here? Dexterity plus 2 plus 1 plus 3. I think that hits an AC of 7. It does. So he hits. You hit Foghorn Beat with your arrow. Doing 5. Taking 1 down. I'll just roll randomly to see which one you hit. 1. Okay, he was a fellow that you'd hit before, and now you took him out. So now they're reduced to half their number, I think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, they're reduced to half their number. They need to make another morale check or flee. They failed the morale check with a 10. They drop their weapons and run as fast as they can. Those of you who have missile weapons can fire them, or you can charge after them. It's your choice. They're running now towards the gates of this courtyard. Interestingly, they're running toward the gates that you see the barmaid from the bar slip into. There's an outer wall of a castle, and that's where you've been fighting. Then inside, past the courtyard, is the castle itself, which is kind of crumbling, and the whole second story has fallen down and has fallen into the courtyard. But it's intact. The bottom floor is intact. And the woman, Maximilian, you see her walk in through the doors and then disappear into darkness. And the kobolds are running, sprinting for that door. Now, they're little. They have little legs, but they can move fast. You guys could charge after them, and you could probably keep pace with them. No question for me. I'm vowed to protect her, but also vowed to protect this the cleric. So I grab his end, I look at him, I'm like, come with me! And I'll just take him and we'll run. We're running together. And let's check his strength, see if he can resist me. And he's got a strength of 7, is what I roll for him. So it's like, I'm definitely stronger, and he can make a check. He failed, and I succeeded with my check. So I got a strength of 15, that's right, on a roof. So I'll drag him with me, and we're running together. Hopefully he'll run with me naturally, because I'm taking care of him. I'm protecting him. He's healed me. I'm going to protect him. I told the lady I'd protect her, don't I? So I did, and now I'm going to run after her and protect her. So I'm running after these the kobolds, because I don't want them to get hurt.
I'm going to fire, I guess, an arrow at the back of a kobold. Seems like a cowardly thing to do. But I guess, I don't know, I'll do that.
Now, one of the kobolds is not moving. He's paralyzed. He has a dagger sticking out of his leg, like out of his thigh, deep in his thigh, and he's unable to move. And you fire an arrow. You hit with a 10, and you do 3 points. Now, if he was a wounded one, then you might have taken him out. Let's see if he was not wounded yet. So he has 1 point left. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 have been killed of the original 10. 1/7 is there. So there are now only 3 fleeing. Of the 3 who are fleeing, 2 are now injured and 1 is okay. Who seemed like the leader of the little group, he has painted the back of his hair red. With mud, dried mud, and so the whole back of his head is like red. The back, it looks kind of cool. It's floppy red hair in the back. He's also painted the backs of his legs black,
like black stripes on the backs of his legs. So, you know, when he turns around and you see his back, it's like black. Anyway, so he's just running. He's interesting the way he's running. And the wounded guy next to him is like kind of painted himself a little bit like a zebra. You know, they paint themselves for battle in this kind of camouflage mud artistry. It makes you feel that these guys do have some type of culture, so you don't necessarily, you know, it's not so great that you're just killing them wantonly, you know. You don't feel like so great about that after all. But they put up a heck of a fight and they almost took a few of you down. Brave little creatures. They left a whole bunch of arrows and bows there with them, and they left their little short swords behind, you know, and they just took off. You have one more round of them running, and you're running after them. Is anybody else running after them? Cleric is going along. You know, he's still a bit groggy from the sleep. Actually, no, he's not, because he's been awake for a while. So he's, but you did bash him. Somebody sort of subdued him, and then somebody else stabbed him with a dagger. So he's feeling, he's caught up in the moment, anyway, and he's going with it. He's got his holy symbol. He's a pacifist. He's running with the fighter. He's going with it. And the dwarf is charging, too. The little dwarf, the fourth level dwarf. Foghorn Pete, what about you? I'm just hanging back. I'm going to fire one more arrow at these retreating guys. I know it's kind of lame, but I don't want them to kill the girl. So that's how I justified in my mind. I rolled a one. You miss heinously. In fact, your arrow goes zinging towards one of your friends and misses your friend. But comes very close. Oops. Yeah. So you better watch out. You did actually hit the cleric in the back, but the arrow didn't puncture all the way through his armor. So you just tagged the cleric. Oh well. You know how it is. It just goes like that sometimes. You know, Mirrorman is excited by all this. It's time to kind of fix the hole, get the horse, maybe that's all okay. What should we do? I look at the other magic user and I say, hey buddy, here's another dagger. I'm trying to sort of make peace, like, hey, I know we robbed you back in the inn, but those were then, this is now. He takes your dagger. He's like, she actually, he, but with a female voice, and she says, the other mage says, I want my spellbook back immediately. Yeah, you know, Jisk was going to copy your spells and then give it right back to you. And you know what? For a small fee, you're welcome to copy mine. Or even call it even and you copy mine. That's okay with me. I'll just copy yours first and then give it right back to you. It's in a safe place. Come on. And, you know, I'm going to start to run, actually. Because I'm feeling like if we talk for too long, there might be more demands. So I'm going to be like, come on, let's go. We're all going. Okay, great. You guys, you take off. Foghorn Pete is covering you with the arrow, and you're running after the kobolds. The kobolds get to the door, and they go inside. And now I have to read what happens next. And perhaps we will leave that for next time. So, the situation as we've left it. Our heroes are running towards the door of the castle. Inside the door, the unsuspecting barmaid has wandered potentially into a monster-filled castle. I mean, it must be, right? Why else are we here? We're all hot on the heels of some kobolds who are trying to escape and maybe going to warn their friends. So we tried to stop them. Foghorn Pete shot some arrows at them as they were retreating, but to no success. Their dwarven, the leader of their group is a dwarf, and he's been charging after them. Mr. Hyde, who's another part of the other party, and Mirrorman, Cloudhair, as well as their other mage, are bringing up the rear. And unfortunately, Florsheim de Bogglebeard is lying in the bottom of a pit, discarded, neglected, and forgotten. His wounds tended to, so he's stable, but unconscious. Until next time. This has been a solo group adventure. Isn't this exciting? You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm Fritz, and this is Fun with Fritz. So, I have a banana. 3, 4, 5 bananas. Just gonna choose one at random. So far on this show, I've just been playing this game live, this role-playing storytelling game, where you propose different things and then you make a roll to see if you succeed or fail, and then there's some latitude in how you describe this, you know, how you describe what happens next. And I've had these 4 different characters, and they each have their own voice, and they're going on an adventure together. And that's what they've decided. That's what keeps them solid. So, I could continue to do that, but I don't know how many people are excited about that. Or if people want something else. If they're really interested in something else. So, I'm going to continue. I've decided, because it's nice to see things through. I'll just continue maybe until they all perish, all the characters, because they're going in dangerous situations and they have no idea what to expect. You know, they walk down a narrow, dusky corridor. Dusky? Musty? It's like dust and must and musk combined at around 9 p.m. in the summer make for a dusky corridor. And they walk down this corridor and they come up to a door. And it's really great when there's more than one door, like 3 doors. And one is blue, one is red, and one is painted with a banana. And in a way, the banana door is alluring because you can identify what it is. But what if the red door is painted with an apple? And the blue door is painted with a peach? Well, then you might think, well, I should go in the peach door because peaches aren't blue. So that's bound to be interesting. And, of course, when you go to turn the doorknob, a little needle shoots out into the palm of your hand and poisons you. You know, and then you die a minute later, or you're weakened for the next week. Weakened for a week. So that's this type of situation that these characters can be in. Oh, they put themselves in. They're actively seeking out this kind of situation. So, you know, they might not last that long. They might not live so long. One thing I've noticed about games and stories is that they're full of all the things that we'd love to do because we're curious, but that we can't do because our lives are so precious. If we had more lives to spend, then we would do these things. And I think that this ends up happening. The games are played out at a certain level of power. If you have other lives to spend based on your curiosity or, you know, your desire to exert a strategic advantage, then you spend the lives because it's kind of like a game. Your own life is so precious. It's so thrilling to spend the other lives. And, you know, of course they should be fictional lives, right? It's okay in a game. If it is a game, but if it's real, then suddenly it's not okay, and then it's, you know, world politics and the situation that we live in. So I think games are a kind of comical, I mean, can be anyway, this kind of storytelling game, is a kind of comical reflection on our fantasies of the reality that we live in. I was talking to my friend the other day, and he was saying that the longer he takes to say things, then the more profound it is. I think sometimes with me, the faster I say things, the more profound. Because maybe what I just said doesn't really make sense. And I'm remembering college when you're trying to talk about ideas that you're like just beginning to have or understand, or that you feel that you even really know. And you just try to say the relationship between one thing and another, like the relationship between putting on a mask and telling people secrets. Like, that seems like, whoa, profound. But, you know, you have to say, instead of the relationship between, it's like the tension between putting on a mask and secrets, or the rupture of telling secrets while wearing a mask, or, you know, so there's a, or the connection, there's a way that the two things link. But really, a lot of it is just pointing to relationships, like simile, metaphor, whatever. So that's why I think it's worthwhile to engage together in a kind of fantasy, to use our heads together to imagine something that's shared. Because it is what we do every day. We're sharing the fantasy of the A train. And the fantasy of the improvements to the subway system. Or the fantasy of everybody is walking too slow for me. You know, or whatever the fantasy is that we, you know, that we're experiencing just from our own perspective. So, if you imagine a story and over time, and you build it over time, I think a lot of your latent fantasy of your life has an outlet. And so you could have the feeling that people are talking about you behind your back at work, or maybe as a performer, like in the club after your show, after your set, they're talking about you, but you don't know what they're saying. Or they're not talking about you, the greater fear, and that you have had no consequence. So I think if you have a kind of story world that you're building, especially if it's social with other people, then a lot of the latent fantasies that you have can be expressed and can develop and mature. And perhaps that leads to a maturing of ourselves in that time. Anyway, that's one of my questions or ideas. I kind of think that we are just a storytelling people. Or like organism, you know, that's like what humans are, is a way of relating my fantasy about the world to you. Like an aphid might be a way of showing the insides of leaves. Like showing that plants have an inside and that they're resilient. You know, plants are cool. You can cut a piece out of a plant and it's just kind of fine. There's a lot of repetition with a plant.
we have so much singularity that if you cut a piece out of us, it's depending on where it is, but usually it's not fine. Usually that's hard for us. So, but in the fantasy, like in any kind of fantasy that you want to create, you know, what if a person was like a plant? What if we were green because we were filled with chlorophyll and we just ate the sun through our skin? Well, some people would say after a while, we would just sit down in a sunny spot because it would feel great. You'd feel like refreshed and you'd get some nutrients from the sun. Or would you get nutrients? Energy you'd get. And then maybe now and then we would walk over and like jump in some water. Or if it was in a place that rained, we wouldn't even have to go and walk and jump in some water. So is it possible? Is there a universe where there were animals that walked around and then they developed the ability to eat sunlight? And then they stopped walking around and they just hung out in sunny places that were close to water or had regular rainfall. And then they sort of turned into plants. Like, is the only reason that we walk around because we're hungry? And is curiosity just a form of sublimated hunger? So, considering this, and then considering storytelling, it's almost like we tell stories, we share our fantasies of reality in order to continue to be what we are. Well, I guess that's a little teleological, like a little bit of a loop, right? Like we are what we are because we are what we are. So perhaps to break through that as a tangent to that circle, what we could say is that we share stories because we're hungry for other people's fantasies. And we want our own fantasies to be consumed as well. Like when I tell you a story about how I went to find somebody's apartment. And I got so lost. And I kept asking people, and they kept telling me different ways to go. And nobody knew the name of the street one block away from where they lived. And I tell you this story. And then finally I found it when I totally gave up. And I just sat down on the steps, and then the person who I was looking for walked by. And it turns out that I was sitting on their steps, and they were walking home. And like I had found it despite, but not, didn't realize, you know. Anyway, if I tell this story, it's like, it can be a story about how it could be Queens. It can easily happen in Queens. This is a realistic story about Queens, right? 45th Street, 45th Road, 45th Place. And they're all crossing like 21st Ave, 21st Street, 21st Place. There's even in Queens, there's like, I think it's even in that same neighborhood, Long Island City, 45th Street and 45th Road. Maybe they cross, you know, each other. There's an intersection there, 45th and 45th or 44th and 44th. So there's a way where, like, Queens is built to have a persistent fantasy of being lost and, or being a place where you ignore the naming system that's on top and you just go with your experience of the place underneath. You can know how to get around, but if you pay attention to the street signs, maybe you'll be doomed. So you may not know the name of the street you live on because it might be confusing to know it, because there's too many streets with this very similar name that are all nearby. So if you go with the name, you won't find where you live. But if you go with, like, oh, it's the red door three blocks underneath the subway, across from the diner, down from the arepa place, then you'll know where you live. So I think our fantasies are like that, that we tell the stories in order to convey like a very specific kind of character and experience. You know, the character of the dutiful, rational friend who's coming to visit and whose visit is desired and expected. So that's the fantasy of going to visit your friend in Queens, taking your bag of goodies. And then the hijinks that ensue when the person can't find where they're going. And we tell these kind of stories all the time. They're really mundane. But the better they are, the more they're about this kind of the character that you are, or the character of the place. Like, it could be, that's a story about, oh yeah, Queens and all the names of the streets and da-da-da. Or, oh, isn't life like that? As soon as you stop looking for something, boom, there you find it. And there's, I remember, you know, like, I studied Chinese. There are all these proverbs, they're called. Like, that's a translation. But what is it in Chinese? 成语. 这个什么意思我想一想 成我也不知道 something language, like, I don't know, I'm going to say pieces of language. I can't remember what 成 means, but it's a word that's also in a lot of other things. So let's say it just means like piece, small piece. I'm doing this as an imaginary translation because I'm just imagining what it means. I don't really have a reference. I don't really know. But anyway, the punchlines of a lot of ideas are contained in phrases that we say all the time. Like I got your back. I got your back. You know, like that. The fantasy is there are people who are going to come and stab you in the back. You're not going to be able to see them because you just have eyes in the front. Like, I got your back for a squid doesn't make as much sense. I think that their eyes are on the sides, but they can see probably like 270 degrees, and they're not as, you know, they're more round, right? They're a radial plan. So if you got a squid's back, that's kind of, it's not gonna mean the same thing. Or an octopus, I guess I'm thinking of an octopus. So, anyway, some of us are like that. Like, some people don't have the fantasy that there's somebody who's going to come and get them in their, like, stab them in the back. Instead, they may have a sore back. So, I got your back. To them, it's like, oh, you're going to give me a massage. That'll be nice. You got my back. Yeah, that's great. Or for another person, it might be like, I carry a backpack. You know, you got my back. Oh, you're going to carry my burden, my baggage. You're going to help me with my baggage. Thank you. That's nice. And for another person, it might be like, whoa, my back is sensitive. I don't want you to get my back. Like, I've got it. I don't need somebody hanging around there. You know. Like, maybe somebody already, they already stand on the wall. I'm standing on the wall already. I'm up against the wall. You can't get someone's back if they're up against the wall. So we have built all these structures, these fantasy structures, ideas, right, in our language. And I guess what I'm saying is that if you have a story that you develop, that you just talk to yourself about even, and that you share, you know, eventually, but like maybe it comes from a place inside you and then, you know, when you're quiet, then I think you can start to, any of us can, start to infiltrate the larger fantasy and start to insert these kinds of phrases that then become real things for people, that they deal with like objects of language that they deal with in their lives. So all of this is to say that, like, it's great to tell stories and to tell them in the particular way that you do. Because when you tell them in your own way, when we tell stories in our own way, we build these handholds, and if we take the handholds, we can climb and get somewhere. And it could be that the place is not up or down. It's just sideways or just inside out or whatever. It might not take us to a place of progress, but it could take us to a place of interest or fear or belonging or many things. But I think I feel that that's what a story does. It takes us from one kind of a state into another. Like, before you listen to my story, and I mean, this story is, you know, what is the quality of the story? Let's leave that aside for the time being. But if you, the story about the person who gets lost in Queens and then finds their friend, and they happen to be sitting in front of their house by accident after they've given up. If you take that story, like, in the beginning, maybe you're thinking about, am I going to eat the rest of this sandwich? Am I going to save it? Am I going to eat it now? I don't want to be eating it in front of a bunch of people watching me on the train. It's kind of a goopy sandwich. This might get on my chin. It might get on my clothes. I'd be okay if it gets on these pants, because who cares? I need to wash them anyway. But I don't want to get on the sleeves of this shirt, because this is not my shirt. I just borrowed it from my friend. He doesn't know I took it. So, and I don't like doing the laundry particularly. So if I don't get it too dirty, I can kind of air it out. Maybe I'll just give it back to him. I'll tell him, hey, thanks, I borrowed your shirt. I didn't wash it, but it's not too bad. And then you think, well, he's pretty easygoing. We know each other pretty well. That's probably okay. If we knew each other less well, I'd probably have to be nicer to him. I'd have to wash the shirt. But then you think, well, I'd have fun washing the shirt if I could wear it while I was washing it and, like, be washed by, like, naked people in the shower washing me while I'm wearing the shirt. They're washing my clothes that I'm wearing. That would be fun. And then that's what you're thinking about. You go off on that thought while this other person starts to tell you about, oh, yeah, I was looking for you, and I did this whole thing, and I looked here, and I looked there, and finally came around. 45th Street, 45th Road, 45th Place, you know, and they couldn't find you. And finally, they walked by, and hey, there they were, and it's like this. And then maybe by the end, you kind of start listening when they're getting more excited, or up, and then maybe it takes you up. So your fantasy that's going on in your head about being in the shower and being washed by these other people, you know, and then maybe being interviewed while that was happening by, like, just a Japanese television station, like they were going to turn this experience that you'd had into a game show. Like, while you're having that fantasy, suddenly the other person gets excited and they're talking to you and they're, like, happy. And that feeling can suffuse your own story, and that can make it comical and light and happy and fun for you too, instead of morose and sad, where it might have gone, you know, with you then being abandoned after the shower and cold and wet and just wearing wet clothes and then realizing you didn't have any more clothes to wear, and that these people who were washing you in the shower, they just wash anyone who steps in the shower, and you no longer felt special, even though it was good for a moment. Somehow, as soon as you stepped out of the shower, they, like, weren't making eye contact, and there was an awkwardness, and you were like, oh, no. And it almost undid the cool experience. You still had the feeling of it, but it kind of lessened it a little bit somehow, and then you were like, oh, man, and now my friend's shirt is wet, and then I'm actually feeling hot, you know, because it's a hot day, but I'm wet. That's going to be a strange, am I going to get a rash? You know, then you think about, well, probably that's not a communicable rash, because it's just the reaction of, like, my skin getting sweaty or something and being wet, and it's too hot. But then you think, I mean, because you do care about your friend, and you know that this friend is, like, susceptible to rashes. Because the last time you saw them, they were talking about, like, athlete's foot or something, and then maybe they got a strange rash when they flew overseas to another country and they swam in the ocean, or even, you know, they just swam in the ocean off Staten Island during a certain, like, tide flux, and it was this strange, frothy color with brown, and, you know, you weren't sure what you were swimming in, and maybe you got an infection from that, and so, you know, you think about all that stuff. So without the other story suffusing into your story, you know, your story might have just really tanked there and gone down. But because you're, you know, you had this fantasy and then the other person's telling their story at the same time, then your stories meld together in this beautiful way. And this is the thing I think that's amazing that we don't really take into account. You know, when a person is telling a story or like someone's relating some experience that they've had, we're listening to what they're saying often, right? Even when, I mean, if we are listening to what they're saying, we're also thinking about something else at the same time that is probably completely different. And it's how those things meld and work together that is this amazing and unique process for everyone. You know, even the mass media that we all consume, I think we all have such a different impression of. And I feel like it's been the goal, the sort of economically infused goal of a lot of mass media to try to create the same experience for everyone. Like the McDonald's experience, like no matter where you go, you're going to get this burger, it's going to be the same burger, and it's going to be really tasty. Well, even McDonald's sort of undoes itself, right? It starts to be its own antidote in a way, where depending on the country you're in, you can get a different burger actually, or a different, you know, it might not even be a burger, right? If the cow is sacred or something, then it's a different thing. Despite trying to be, like, its whole mission in a way is to be the same thing everywhere. And it is very much the same, but it's still a different thing. So I think that's interesting. Even when we try to make things like exactly the same, they still get synthesized and suffused with these other fantasies that are happening. Because, the you know, a burger is a fantasy. It's like a fantasy of food, you know? Especially the mostly soy-based burger, right? I mean, the irony of McDonald's is like maybe it was more healthy when it was soy-based. And we were all upset, like, oh, it's soy. It's not even real meat. But then it is real meat, and we're like, oh, but we can get all these, you know, the hormones and then foot and mouth disease, whatever. There's all these diseases we get from real meat, so maybe let's have the soy burger again. You know, it's funny how these things go back and forth. So I think, and this is not just my thought, but like politics or our experience of life is the unspoken story mixing with the spoken story privately. And I think we're constantly reacting to the mixing of these two things, what we imagine to be the mixing of these two things. So, for example, like the whole, like when Clinton was president and there was the scandal with him having an affair or something in the Oval Office, right? Or I don't even know if it was called an affair. It was like a tryst, maybe. So, and I mean, I didn't really follow this. Did anybody really follow this? Like, who would want to follow this? How interesting is this? So there's this way where like adults, you know, like grown people are like getting into each other's business in this nitty-gritty kind of way because it's important in some sense that's beyond them. And it really is beyond them. They're like, well, why is this really important? I guess it's mostly important because we could use it to try to get this guy down, take this guy down, you know, because people have an idea. And this is the conceit, right? Like we have this idea that the politician is morally pure, and if it is morals, or like at least abides by a certain code of behavior. And if they're not doing that behavior, that they're not abiding by that code, then they can't be a politician anymore. Like Wiener, the local New York guy. Oh, someone's at the door. Hey.
Hey.
Hey, this is my sister. I'm taking her inside. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Come on in. We're on the radio.
Oh, hi.
Isn't that crazy? You want to say hello?
Hi. Thanks for listening.
How was your walk? Oh, okay. Well, should I stop? I'll stop my radio show.
meant. Radio Free Brooklyn. Hear Fun with Fritz every Sunday, 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Hi, I'm your man Cloudhair. I'm a fictional character. Come and hang out with me every Saturday at 10 a.m. and at 10 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. So, you want to make a promo? Yeah, you know, I'm just going to make a radio promo telling people about the show that I'm on the Saturday at 10 a.m. and again at 10 p.m. on Radio Free Brooklyn. Go ahead and roll a 20-sided die. Ooh, 5. Better try another approach. And you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.